Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
You know, Jim, it's so great that Rick Nielsen agreed to come on our show.
I know, Patrick. I'm on top of the world. All right, Patrick, what do you think we should do on today's show?
You know, I was thinking maybe we could play the second part of that Rick Nielsen interview, Jim, that we did on episode 1000, right? It could be a good idea. And I'll tell you this. You know, Rick has obviously been interviewed a million times, but, you know, I think at first he was a little unsure of us. But I think as the conversation went on, he kind of warmed up to where we were coming from, and I think he liked it a little bit. You know, he never said, like, I had to go or anything like that. And we just kept grooving. So this second part is really cool. I thought we hit a really interesting kind of vibe.
Yeah, so I'll just tell the listeners this. We ended up talking with Rick for an hour, and we cut it into two parts. So you heard the first part yesterday, or if you didn't, go back and listen to that. And the second part today. And, you know, an hour is a lot of time to get with a big star like Rick
really
Nielsen,
is.
Right? So it is.
Yeah.
But when we started, before we, you know, pressed record on the interview, I asked him, I said, how much time do you have? And he goes, you know, I know how to hang up the phone if I need to.
That's what he said.
Yeah. So
that's a great answer. Yeah. And at one point he picked a guitar up and was actually like playing while he was talking to us, which is cool.
He did. I think you're going to hear that right here as we start with the second part. So let's get to that. This show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And here is part two of our interview with Cheap Trick's Rick Nielsen. You know, it's been noted that, like, in the 90s with, like, Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins and things like that, that there was sort of this revival of appreciation, I guess I would say, for Cheap Trick. That all these at that time, young bands were citing you as influence and it made sense. But what I wonder is, when you guys were coming...
Pissed me off. They never covered our songs, so.
Oh, well, right, because the publisher.
Like Kurt Cobain. He said, "You know, we're like Cheap Trick, except the guitars are louder." And I said, "I think my guitar's pretty f***ing loud."
No doubt.
You know, I've got to do a lot of stuff with different people, and you know, if I lived in L.A., once again, why didn't I move here or there? You know, if I lived in L.A., it's like people in L.A., when they say, hey, man, I'll see you next week, I'll give you a call, they never call you. But in New York, they do. And so, I don't know where that story came from. Never mind.
Well, so speaking of New York, this is what I was going to ask was, when you guys were coming up in the 70s and in the late 70s, you know, sort of breaking through, did you feel any kind of kinship at all with the, like, punk bands and that kind of stuff? Because that was right around the same time, and well, it was kind of sort of similar, right?
Well, when we did our second album, I said, with Tom Werman, he says, you know, stuff he said, you know, we love the Sex Pistols. He said, he didn't like that. So, you know, the Who, I get it. You know, so I played with the Who when I was in high school. I played with them at Majestic Hills in Lake Geneva. We opened for the Who way back. You know, that was, I was still in high school, like I said. But it was like, he said, yeah, well, you know, I don't like the Sex Pistols. We liked all that, you know, it was just like thrilling. But, you know, I never tried to be anybody else. It's bad enough being me, but I'm just like, you never tried to be anybody else. But he says, no, I don't like stuff like that. He says, I like the Who, though. And I said, well, okay, we'll give him a shot here. And it's like, we made it sound like the Guess Who, not the Who, you know?
Yeah.
So I can't remember what your question
was. Oh, well, I was just wondering, you know, did you feel sort of an association with those, you know, like CBGB bands and that kind of thing?
Well, yeah. You know, it's like we played at Max's Kansas City while we were doing our first record. So this is 1976. Mm. 76. And, you know, but people had heard about us, like Gene and Paul from Kiss. They came to our show. Monty Rock III, I don't know if you know who he was. He had a song called Disco Tex. And he was dressed up as a cowboy.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. And it was like Wayne County, MC5. We, you know, we knew all those guys. You know, we played everywhere. But it wasn't like... we were going to England in 77, and we went to the Roundhouse in Chalk Farm to go see somebody, and like all these guys in the audience, they were all spitting at him. You know, that was the deal, like in 77, spit on the band and all that stuff. And, you know, that just, you know, got Johnny Rotten going. I thought, oh, God, we're going to play here next week. Uh-oh. You know, they're, besides hating us, they'll really get some spin on us. But I think they respected us for whatever we were. So it's like, so I knew about the scene, but it's like, I wasn't trying to be that or trying to be any, you know, like we just, I don't know what we tried to be. We just tried to do what we did.
Yeah.
And by that, we ended up meeting a lot of players. I'm still good friends with Mick Rouse, and Mick Ronson played with us, and, you know, like the good stuff.
Right.
Pete Townsend still talks to me.
So speaking of Kiss, here's a question I have for you. Who's in charge of getting all those Kiss records that you throw out into the crowd every time?
Well, we used to have to go to buy used records, you know.
Yep.
And but we took the actual records out because we figured we'd slice people's heads off and throw them out. But then we couldn't, they were hard to find after a while, so then we had the record company make us Cheap Trick flats, and I usually throw those.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. And then, unless Gene or Paul show up at a gig, then we'll run out and get some, the real one.
Some they feel, Kiss vinyl. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, where they feel, all right, there's a royalty for me, you know.
The highest compliment.
Yeah. Hey,
you know, thinking of like when you guys started out, Rick, I mean, if you were starting a band, you know, today, you know, if you're a teenager or from the grassroots, I mean, do you think it's harder now than it was when you guys were doing it in the mid 70s because of the internet and social media and downloads?
Yeah, it's like I'd have to learn how to dance for one.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's like, and I don't think I'd make it there. You know, it's like on American Idol and all that stuff. Some of these guys are just fabulous.
Yeah,
you know, on The Voice and all this stuff. It's like, you know, I'd never get a deal, you know. But I mean, it's like, you think about it, it's like here's Tom Waits and here's Bob Dylan, here's Axl Rose. Listen to those voices. Listen to Billy Corgan. I mean, it's like if they can get a record deal, then I suppose I could too. You know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's I wouldn't know where to start these days. You know, if you're starting a band.
Yeah, you got to know too much. You got to be on the internet. Well, how many likes did you get?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I'd rather get more dislikes.
Than likes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, and everybody drops, you know, song by song on Spotify now. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
well, I mean, I growing up, I used to love albums.
Yeah,
you know, now that I'm older, it's like I can't see what's on anything, any of it. I mean, I can't read what's on a cassette or a right. CD or, you know, I like that because I liked the giving the credits. That's all I knew about Chess Studios and all this stuff. 2120 South Michigan Avenue,
right.
And it's like I knew that stuff because you learn who the engineer is, and you learn who the coffee maker is. You
right.
Know.
They used to have all that stuff on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Well, Rick, how many guitars do you have now?
How many do you want?
I'll take. I need a few. Yeah, I'd love to have a few guitars right now.
I got about 500.
Is that right?
So, yeah, something like that.
And I've you play them all?
What? You see this guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of the two Les Pauls with a single single. There's no seam down the middle here.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
There's only about two of them. 59.
In all of existence, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I've got in here, I've got I got a 265 Strats. I got a Epiphone Cornet over here, and I've got seven Dwight Cornets. Those are the ones I've been trying to get lately.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I'll take any of those you want to send me. It's fine. Yeah. Any of those will work.
Sorry, wrong number. Gotta go.
So are there any in your collection that aren't, you know, kind of like Nigel, never to be played, right?
Well, no. My stuff's all to be played. I've got stuff that nobody's ever seen. I've got one of the rarest guitars I have is a 1963 Gildemerle Travis. They only made three of them. They only made three, and I've got the second one.
Wow.
They were $2,000 when they were available. And, you know, you could buy a Volkswagen or a Ford Mustang for about $2,000 at that point. And they only made three, and I finally found one. I looked for one for 30 years. I'd never seen one in person. And then I finally did, and I paid more to get redone because it was smashed, and I got some of the original guys that had put it together in the first place in 1963.
But then
I had the guy from one of the guys from Starbucks, one of the president guys, heard that I had it, offered me $1 million.
Did he really?
And I was like a fool, didn't sell it to him. No, but you know, it's like I'd looked for it for 35 years. I mean, I don't care. You know, if my family needed money or whatever, I should have done it.
$1 million and free coffee for life.
Yeah, well, my wife would get that.
Yeah, there you go.
Save me money.
Probably would, right?
My Starbucks bill is higher than whatever.
Who made the custom guitar that looks like you?
Hamer. I got the very first Hamer ever built because I knew those guys. Actually, when I lived in Philadelphia, I got a phone call. My wife was pregnant. I don't know how that happened. This is 73, and we were broke. And, you know, that was where the band Sick Man of Europe was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had five shows in a year. That's about like this year.
Yeah, right.
And so this guy that I knew, because I'd, you know, been playing guitar for a long time, he knew me, and he got in touch with me and asked if I still had Les Paul. Sort of like the Jeff Beck story. Yeah, I do. And he flew to Philadelphia and to see me, and he gave me $2,500 for my Les Paul because my wife was pregnant. We didn't have insurance. We're going to have to leave and go back to Rockford to have a baby. And I got the $2,500, and that was Paul Hamer, who started Hamer Guitars. He was a mailman at that time.
Oh, wow.
He had his hair braided down to his ass. But we just, you know, we liked the old guitars of that era, and that's when they started building their own. And that ended up to be the first one I ever had. And now I've got about 100 of those. Not kids, just
right. Yeah.
And how heavy is the five neck guitar?
Well, I used to be 6 foot something tall. Now I'm about 5'3" because it wore me down quite a bit.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. You carried it around. You don't think I was hilarious? And that's going to be featured at that. Rockford Hard Rock Casino Rockford.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, but at the front and out front of the Hard Rock, one of the coolest things I asked for, and they're doing it, about a 70 or 100 foot tall checkerboard Explorer out front, as opposed to you usually have this Les Paul. It doesn't look like a Les Paul.
Yeah.
And so they're doing that because it's
sweet.
Because the whole place is kind of based around me or whatever.
This is going to be great.
Yeah, it is.
Amazing. Yeah. Do you have an opening date?
Yeah. No, I don't have an opening date. When it's done, it's done.
Yep.
I've already asked Jeff Beck to be the first artist to play there.
Oh, sweet, man.
And I said, you can charge whatever you want.
Yep.
And I said, I'll have to take it up with the management. Wait a minute. I know that. And then I just 2 days ago, Sammy Hagar said he wants to play there.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And it'll be easy to get people there because, I mean, it's a regular hard rock venue and the whole thing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so Patrick doesn't know this, but there used to be, so the site is used to be the Clock Tower Resort, and there was actually a time museum. It was part of the building there where they had, like, timepieces, like, you know.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was a artifacts, those kind of things. And so now it'll be a Cheap Trick museum. How great
kind
is
of,
that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I was there for the whole thing. You know, I did some drone videos where they're going way back, and the only thing that was left was the tower. It was still out front there. And wow. then we got it. I got a video of it getting knocked down. And that used to be the Time Museum was interesting. There was Seth Atwood. He had an atomic clock in there. You know, like he had the real stuff. I mean, the real collection, not a bunch of Rolex watches sitting in there.
Yeah.
That's John Mayer. Hey, look at my collection. I went and saw him, and it was like, because I took him Gilmer Earl Travis. I took it to a show, and I said, "Hey, you never seen one of these?" And he said, "You know about me and collecting guitars." Yeah, he says, "I don't collect guitars anymore. I collect watches." Oh, Jesus. Okay. That was the last time I talked to him.
That's not nearly as cool as guitar. Yeah.
No, of course. Here I got these new expensive watches.
Yeah.
All right.
Wow.
Wow. You have a Lamborghini too that you don't drive? Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Is there a song in your catalog that you wish were more popular?
Oh yeah, all of them. Well, I don't know. It's like we got some good ones. We got some not so good. But you know, it's like we have a record just came out, live from '77, and it's called "What Out to Get You" or something like that. And we have another record coming out in the spring, probably on BMG.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, every song, you know, it's like Clock Strikes 10 never did anything except it was number one in Japan.
Wow.
Sick Man of Europe, it was a hit in England, nowhere else. But that was the name of our band in Philadelphia.
Right.
It was the worst name for a band ever. And we wait 35 years later, and we have a song by it. He's like, how smart are we?
And there was a Cheap Trick cover band that used that name, right?
Yeah, well, there are a bunch of Cheap Trick cover bands.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a band in Milwaukee, too. They're called Indonesian Junk.
Really?
Yeah.
They're a Cheap Trick cover band. Wow.
Yeah. No, I don't know if they are or not, but they're Indonesian Junk, and they're, you know, taken from Surrender.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And what else? There's a bunch of different stuff like that. It's weird.
That is interesting.
Yeah. I said weird, not interesting.
Right. Well, to me, kind of the same.
and just now, we have Al Jorgensen, and played with the guys from Megadeth.
Yeah.
And their first single was Auf Wiedersehen. Song by Cheap Trick.
Yeah,
really.
Go look it up. Yeah,
interesting.
What's the guy? It's the bass player from Megadeth, and they did it, and Al Jorgensen singing on it, and it's like pretty cool. And,
that is pretty cool.
Yeah, Charlie Benanti from Anthrax is on drums, and you know, plus Anthrax, they did. I think they did Auf Wiedersehen too. He did a version of it, and they did his version of Big Eyes. It's sort of interesting, all the different kind of wacky stuff that's around.
That's really cool. Okay, so let me ask you the opposite question then. Is there a song that you're tired of playing?
All of them.
All of them?
That can't be true.
I like to play, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I mean, it does matter, but it's like, you know, I like the stuff that's fun. I like the stuff that people react good and bad to. You know, some stuff is like, you know, like, you know, like, and everybody's different because I've met people, that are musicians too. It's like, oh, Rick, the one song that I think is your worst song, what is it? Come on, Dad, what is it? It was one of my favorites. It's like, well, how did they hear it different than I heard? You know, I didn't think it was my favorite, but it's like, it wasn't the least favorite one. I could think of other ones that I think are much shittier. And I'm not going to name them because you'll probably like that too much.
Yeah, all right. No, that's fine. How do you view Cheap Trick's legacy?
They were too dumb to quit.
Your epitaph.
There you go. That's it.
Okay.
That's
all right. All right.
I can't believe they're still alive and they're still alive. What, this is 400 years in the future? Wow.
Yeah, amazing.
No, but I mean,
it can't be killed.
It's obvious, you know, when you mention all these different bands, and we brought up other ones too, and musicians, you've had a really big influence, and you know, not every band does.
Yeah, well, you think about it. You know, like, I think I always thought about us as like, we're like everybody's, or not everybody, we're a lot of people were their fifth favorite band. To say, well, we're the number one.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I get that. You know, it's like, if you're the fifth, that's still good. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what was the question?
Well, I also like, to me, I like the diversity of people who cite Cheap Trick, too. That it's not just like one niche scene that's into you guys. It's like mainstream, alternative, classic, modern, you know, metal, all this kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, and it's funny. It's like, you know, I played with John Lennon. Name somebody else that has.
Right.
And is still working or whatever. You know, I was at Jeff Beck's house. Let's see. I was on the show that Otis Redding was going to play in Madison when his plane crashed in Lake Monona.
Wow.
We were the Grim Reapers then. And, you know, I played with a lot of different people. And it's like, and the fact that I got people that's, you know, still harass me. I mean, call me. And like, here's another one. About 3 days ago, Sting's manager, who I know him because he's a Cheap Trick fan, and it's like he's looking for a guitar. So instead of being in England looking around, he's calling me from Rockford, Illinois, to help him find his 73 Candy Apple Red Rickenbacker. It's like, you know, it's like, but I enjoy that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Rather than ask me, what's your favorite guitar? What's your favorite song? Wait a minute, you guys asked me that once.
Right. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Rick, was, you know, I guess about 15, 20 years ago, you guys...
Oh, that night, I can't remember.
You were playing at the 930 Club now. You started putting out these basement
DC
bootlegs things. Yeah, I did see you guys play at the 930 Club in D.C. You put out these Bunnies Basement Bootlegs series that were really cool. I mean, did you guys record like everything back then, or did a lot of that come from fan recordings and stuff like that?
No, most of it was, we'd record every show every night.
Is that right?
And Bunny was the only one that would, you know, I didn't even care. I didn't want to hear it.
Right.
But then after when he started putting it out, it's like, he's getting rid of the stuff and doing this and that. And, you know, it's like, well, that was his forte. So, you know.
It's very interesting stuff. Yeah, the way it's organized. Yeah.
Yeah. So you tell our mistakes are real.
Yeah, there you go. You weren't like Miles Davis and went back and listened to the set. You just played immediately after the show. Apparently, he used to do that.
Yeah. Once a night is enough. That's what she said.
Right. You could always have some kid point out the missed notes.
There you go. Yeah.
Some little wise prick. No, nobody's got that kind of tolerance.
Right.
Okay, well, we're going to let you go, Rick. We very much appreciate your time.
Yeah, this is great.
One last question I have for you. You brought up the name John Lennon, and we're coming up on the 40th anniversary of John Lennon's death. And I think people know that you worked with him a bit on the Double Fantasy sessions. What are your memories of John Lennon?
Let's see. Well, that was the day that Dax was born. My son.
Oh, wow.
And if it was August 12th, 1980, and that was, if McCartney would have asked me, I would have been in the hospital with my wife.
Right.
So there's my story. But I got to the studio, and it's like they wanted a harder edge. And so I walked in, I got set up, because we played in Montreal the night before, flew into New York, and it was a big secret. You couldn't, we weren't supposed to tell anybody. Hmm. We got there, and there's people outside the record. And said the Hit Factory, where it was, and it's like, I smuggled cigars, because toasting my son, I smuggled Cuban cigars in there, smoked with Yoko and John, and went, so when I went and got set up in the studio, because it was Jack Douglas set it all up, and then John and Yoko walked in, and John Lennon looked at me and said, it's you! I think he thought I was Ricky Nelson. Yeah. But then while I was playing, he told us to Jack and to Bunny, when I was playing the guitar, John Lennon looked at them and he says, I wish I would have had Rick on Cold Turkey. He says,
really?
He said, Clapton choked up.
Wow.
And I said, you know, I didn't hear it from me, but they both told me. And it's like, you know, plus I gave him a guitar. I had one made for him, but it wasn't ready then, but I loaned him my guitar, and I got it back from Yoko 3 years after he was murdered.
Wow.
I was gonna take John guitar shopping, and he had a Mellotron just like my Mellotron, you know. And so we talked. It was guy to guy. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I said, John, everybody, you know, everybody tells you yes, John. Yeah. Like Steven Tyler, yes, Steven. You know,
yeah.
Your farts don't stink. Everything's perfect. You know, it's like, but I said, yeah, I'm gonna take him because he had this. He had these old guitars, and one was a Velena, which is a piece of crap, an aluminum guitar with a jewel in it. It's like, you're John Lennon. No, you don't need that, John. And then he had the Rickenbacker, the three-quarter size one. It still had the set list scotch taped to the side of it.
Wow.
from Shea Stadium. You know, so this is gold to me. You know, this is like the stuff, but. I wanted to take him guitar shopping, you know, because, hey, John, no, John, I know how to say no, you know, because they could always fire me and whatever, I don't care. And it was like, and we were talked about actually doing the next album with Cheap Trick being his band.
Really?
Really.
Wow.
And then that didn't happen. So 3 years after he was murdered, I got my guitar back from Yoko.
Hmm.
And there you go. And I still have the strength, so I got his DNA.
Yeah, there you go. Right, the magic is in there.
Where were you when you heard about the tragedy?
I was in Minneapolis. We were playing somewhere up there. It was Monday Night Football, so.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, just awful.
Yeah. Okay.
40 years, I can't believe it.
I know.
That's amazing, yeah.
Jesus criminy.
I know it.
don't do the math. Uh-oh.
No, don't do the math on that one.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Rick Nielsen. Thank you so much, Rick, for hanging out. You're very generous with your time, and it's been a wonderful conversation. And I'll talk to you again in another 30 years.
Great, it's in my favorite 1,000th show.
Yeah,
that's right. We'll come to the opening of the casino out there. So good luck with that too.
Bring lots of chips.
Will do.
Okay, see you guys.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Rick.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and our thanks to Rick Nielsen. Thank you so much for spending time with us. It really was a joy. It was a joy.
Yeah, it really was. And totally, you know, enjoyed it and you know, was honored and thrilled to talk to Rick. And what a cool guy, man. He's great. You know, so clear-headed, so open-minded about stuff. And, man, he had so many amazing experiences. It really was a treat to learn about that and talk to him in person.
One thing I should let people know is that Cheap Trick apparently does have a new album.
Yeah.
That will be coming out sometime in 2021. I think they're just waiting for the right timing based on the pandemic and stuff. Because, you know, this is a band that normal times tours constantly.
They got to be on the road. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they maybe don't want to put out the record if they can't go out and play the song. So, but look for that sometime in 2021. I think you should see a new Cheap Trick music.
Yeah. And hopefully you can catch their show. Wouldn't that be amazing? Absolutely. Going to see a show. God, please. I know. I hope so.
I know. And then, of course, we'll be sure to have Rick on every 1,000 episodes of our show.
And neither of us may be hosting this podcast, but it'll continue with other hosts, by that time.
All right. If you want to comment at all about Cheap Trick and Rick Nielsen, get your voice on an upcoming episode, you can call 612-440-1985. Leave a message there. I'm sure people out there have Cheap Trick concert stories.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, I've only seen him a few times, Jim, and I have like three picks that I've caught from Rick Nielsen because he would always throw tons of picks into the crowd, which is great.
If you notice at the beginning of a show, the entire like mic stand that he has just has all these picks, and then he's just constantly, you know, throughout the course of the show throwing them out there.
Right.
They put on a great live show. They really do.
They're great.
Known for it, and they've been bringing it for all these years. Okay, so I mentioned the phone line. Call, leave a message, or you can email us rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, all those at suburbspod. All right, I'm worn out. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's decompress a little bit and then come back next week with some more stuff, right?
Yeah, we need the weekend off because 1,001, it's a lot. Need to get a good night's sleep.
It is. All right. Thanks again to Rick Nielsen. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
Billy Corgan sent me about a 2 or 3 page letter about, because he saw us playing at some awful thing in Chicago and we're opening for Eddie Money or something like that. It was like, Rick, don't give up.